powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Starting off great already. Brock, you got a nice little workout in midday workout.
Yes.
Then pretended to use my coat again. It's a coat cardigan as a towel. Walked into the studio, said, "Whose towel is this? Thanks for this. I start laughing, about to make fun of Curtis or whoever's sweater I think this is. Realize it's mine. And then Jake proceeds to make fun of the horrified look on my face when I see.
Yeah. Oh, wait!
Wait! Yeah. It's mine!
Her face just, it was horrified.
It went from being a bully and being awful and making fun of someone
to being bullied
to where I am.
Oh, the joke's on me. This stinks.
But the real joke is, though, is that, are you sure that he was joking about using it?
No, I'm not entirely. Because when Salk was in here, he really was doing wall sits in there, talking with Howdy and Big Kyle and Curtis, working out. I saw him come in this morning, and that's it.
What did you say that's called? A coatigan?
A coatigan. It's a coat again. And a cardigan.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, just a fun fact.
Brock, thanks for stopping in with us, man, because we've got some things to talk with you
about. A lot of things. So first I want to talk about Super Bowl hangover. I do want to get into some Husky football kind of at the end here, but I want to start with potentially a Super Bowl hangover that could benefit the Seahawks. Do you buy that the Seahawks are in a better place now because of San Francisco's loss?
Yeah, I do. I think history kind of shows that for the loser of this game. And not that history or what happened to the Carolina Panthers is absolutely what happens to the Rams or to the 49ers, but history is on the side of the Seahawks in this one. And you know how challenging. I was listening actually to Dave Wyman on the drive home yesterday, and he was quoting a GM in the league of the challenge of both winning a Super Bowl and then ultimately losing it. The challenge of winning, as we know here, is everybody wants to take credit. Right, it is that whole credit pie, and it's my slice, and it's your slice, and my slice is bigger than your slice. And, you know, that's something on its own to deal with. But when you lose, then it's a blame pie. And that blame pie, to me, is more challenging to deal with. And I think that is why you have seen, over the decades, the loser of this game really struggle to get back the next year. Mm-hmm. And whether that's going to be Richard Sherman, whether that's going to be Jimmy Garoppolo, whether that's going to be some of the veteran offensive linemen, whether that's going to be the running backs, whether it's going to be Quan Alexander, whoever it is, as they sit around for weeks on end and months on end, and they don't, you know, the other aspect is 20-some years ago when I was doing this, you got right back into it in March. Like, there wasn't that much time. You basically had all of February off. And one off season, I built a Riverwalk fireplace and tiled the kitchen, and I did terrible on both of those things. But I had the whole month of February to do it, and just like these guys get February. But then come like March 10th, we were back in the facility. We were QB meetings. We were quarterback school. We were lifting. We were conditioning. These guys get the rest of February. Mm-hmm. They get all of March. They get most of April. They can't even get back in there till the end of April, and you are just stewing on that for longer than ever. And I think that's also played a role here in recent history as to why these teams have struggled so much post-Super
Bowl. You mentioned players, right, and part of that blame pie. But how about coaches? Because we looked at the Rams last year. We looked at Sean McVay in particular. And he probably took that loss as hard as anybody. And I think that messed with his psyche, to be quite honest, in the sense that he is such a football junkie that he looked at this and said, okay, I'm going to try and study and figure out all these different ways.
And why did they figure me
out?
Why did I get figured out?
Exactly. And so Kyle Shanahan, I think he's got a little more cockiness to him in the sense that it's like, I'm going to be fine. But also he walks with a different legacy with him that you've gotten into two Super Bowls. You've been in the lead in fourth quarters, and you've blown both of those. Now, one is an offensive coordinator.
Yep.
One is a head coach. Does any of that go to the psyche of Kyle Shanahan, and do you think that derails him in any sort of way this offseason?
Yeah, I think it can. My hunch is that staff is going to stick together. I think that's a pretty good staff. And I think John Lynch is a pretty good GM too. You know, and in fact, I think Les Snead and the crew with the Rams are also pretty capable in why they were, you know, on the cusp of making the playoffs and didn't totally derail this season, even with some injuries down there. I mean, this is going to be the toughest division in football, bar none. I mean, I don't even think there will be a debate going into next season as far as the best division in the NFL. The Niners, the Seahawks, the Rams, and even the Cardinals, as they proved in the month of December, are a competent football team who found their young quarterback. So, yeah, I think it can mess a little bit. But as you guys were talking about yesterday, Jake, and most of the probably radio stations across the country were talking about, and as much as it is Shanahan, it's really the quarterback.
I
think he was the one more than anybody that was most exposed and most challenged in that fourth quarter of that Super Bowl.
Yes. And one thing that I think the Seahawks will have to do if they want to get back to a Super Bowl is they need to make some changes on both offense and defense.
The right investments, right?
The right investments. They have $60 million in cap space, draft picks that they – it's probably been a while since they've had a second rounder that they didn't acquire via a trade during the draft, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Jake and I and Salk, when he was in here earlier, have been kind of debating where some of those investments should be spent.
Oh, Jake and I were texting each other last
night. Oh, I believe it.
We got a texting fight.
Yeah, no, we've asked multiple times to be included in those threads just to watch you guys talk.
Sure.
So far, Jake has declined to do that, but it's fine. I'm obviously over it. Yeah, it'll happen.
If you let me try on your coat again.
Coat again?
Yeah, if you let me try that on, maybe you can get into the little
guy. I mean, it's kind of a little coat.
It's tempting.
A sweaty guy.
Tempting.
Where would I invest?
Yeah, where would you invest?
My number one priority is at D-line, and I think we did text about this. We have talked about this. Period, bar none. You have to make those decisions with Jaron and with Jadavian and what you're going to do on that defensive line. That is the top priority. I think then you need speed. I mean, you need speed at corner. You need speed at safety. You need speed at wide receiver and 3, 4, and 5. You need speed at tight end. Like, I need speed on this roster. So, to me, it's D-line, bar none. It is speed, and that may mean a high-end draft pick at corner. I was looking at a bunch of mock drafts last night, and these guys are starting to formulate their boards, the Daniel Jeremiah's and the other guys, and this is a great elite draft of wide receivers. It is a very good draft of corners. So give me just elite speed at that position, and then probably for me, the next one down, the next third priority is offensive line. Mm. I think you've got decisions to make there. You know, Jamarco Jones and George Fan, and as you really start to plug those things in, and what are you going to do with Justin Britt? Like, you've got to solidify that plan to me up front. And I wouldn't mind a really capable offensive lineman rather than just a $2 million, you know, DJ Fluker, a $2 million Mike Iupati, a $2 million Bradley Sowell, a $2 million. You know, if you've got the right guy, I wouldn't mind a commitment there as well.
It's interesting because I think there is a conversation of you have to invest all on defense, right? And what does that look like? And defining that, and really when you talk through it with people, it's the defensive line.
Mm-hmm.
And you had mentioned corner, and where do you put that money? Do you use free agent money? Do you use draft capital? It's interesting because you talk about team speed, and my question is, for the defense in particular,
yes,
is this group in Seattle going to look at all three levels and say that the linebackers and the secondary have that team speed that we're looking for? Because they're in an interesting spot. Like, let's
how could they,
Jake?
How could they realistically look at who they're going to match up? This is what you and I were debating last night. And
I wouldn't know.
I'm sorry to cut you off, but how could you honestly and objectively look at who you're facing in this division? Right, with Deebo Samuel and Emmanuel Sanders and you know, what San Francisco, and they even had an injury to their top fastest wide receiver, Marquise Goodwin. You look at facing them, Arizona, and look at facing that quarterback and some of that crew, and you know they're going to add to the receiving core in that city. And then the Rams, who have always given you problems. How can you not look first and foremost in your own division and say, gosh, we have to, at linebacker and safety and corner, add more speed to match up with these people? Because, frankly, you didn't do it very well. And you haven't done it very well against the Rams over the last 3 years. So, KJ Wright, Bradley McDougald, Trey Flowers. To me, none of those guys can I today pencil in and say, oh, yeah, they're my starter for 2020. And I feel great about that in those matchups with those squads.
And that's where I think there's an interesting debate here is I don't disagree with you. But my question is that how they view it? Is that how they view it in the sense that I think they view it and say KJ Wright had a great bounce back year, that yes, there are some deficiencies and that he is older and that it did show, but that he does bring experience and that he was able to statistically have a strong year.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they believe that they can get by another year with that situation. I think they can get by another year with Bradley McDougal competing with Marquise Blair. I look at some of that, and it's going to be interesting to see. And if fixing the defensive line, is that enough? Is that enough to really fix that defense?
I don't think it is. And I think that thermodynamic law of entropy, which catches up to everybody in the NFL, that is, things break down. There is no way, again, and I think Bradley McDougal, his price tag would be an awesome third safety in this league. I think you can be a Super Bowl caliber team with him as your third safety. And if somebody gets nicked up for 3 weeks, you slide in Bradley McDougal and you feel great about that. And honestly, at his cap number, that's a good cap number for a third safety. I think KJ Wright at this stage of the game would be a pretty good backup linebacker. A veteran guy like that helping that room. Now, at his price tag, I think that's too rich. I don't think you can pay $8 million on your cap space for a backup linebacker because I don't think KJ can play 16 or 17 games. I would not want to count on that in the 2020 season.
What was the word that you used?
Entropy. The law of thermodynamics. Yes.
Okay, so the law of entropy.
Yes.
Yes. So as you apply that.
I believe that's correct.
As you apply that, you have the law of entropy heading on a 35-year-old tight end in Greg Olsen. But the Seahawks are reportedly very interested in Greg Olsen. How do you feel about that? Because to me, I understand the age, I understand the injury history, but this is a guy that can still play and could help this team.
Yeah, I think that is a position where you can mitigate the speed a little bit. I don't think you can do that in today's NFL defensively. I just don't with who you're going to match up with. I think if you run a 4.8 40 and not a 4.6 40, you can get away with that at tight end. Right, I don't know if I would want him to be my one. I would sure hope Will Dissly can come off both of his injuries and be my one. And then could he be a two or a three? Yeah, I'm comfortable with that at the right number. But defensively, I just, the last couple years, whew, you've got to get faster, man. You've just have to, in this conference and in this division, there has to be at the top of, if I'm a scout working for John Schneider or Trent Kirshner or Scott Fitterer, man, the top of my list is speed. Shaquille Griffin this year was a Pro Bowl player. He was a Pro Bowl player not because I think he has tremendous ball skills or he has tremendous instincts, but he has elite speed. And to me, that can compensate an awful lot.
I'm going to switch it up and head to Montlake. Where are the Huskies at in their transition from Peterson to Lake?
Work in progress.
Yeah?
Yeah, work in progress. And I think a couple quarterbacks that they looked at in that transfer portal and I think had a high interest in both said, thanks, but no thanks. And I'm going to go into the SEC. And that would that being Franks, who ended up at Arkansas out of Florida. And then the news last night, the KJ Costello, yeah, who kind of flirted with Washington, ends up going with Mike Leach to Mississippi State.
Does that concern you? Does that concern you that you have two graduate guys that, in all honesty, you look at the situation here in the quarterback room, is a really good situation for a fifth-year guy with all
so.
That experience, and they decide to say, after further digging, we're going to go somewhere else?
I would, yes, I would think that is. Even Kyle's looking at me. I see you, Kyle.
I'm back here staying.
I know.
KJ Costello stinks. Missing out on KJ Costello is totally fine.
Yes. I think he's an average talent, but I think that QB room, to Jake's point, could have used a KJ Costello.
Agreed.
Right, that QB room that's going to be a challenge. And whether that's going to be Sermon, whether that's going to be Dylan Morris, and you know those guys, Jake, better than any of us and all of us, frankly, combined, is you've worked with them and you've helped shape them and helped mentor them along the way. Mm-hmm. You know the answer to that question. They could have used a veteran guy with experience to come in there and at a minimum compete, but certainly is I think, a little bit of a security blanket. Next year can be tough, man. At Utah,
yep.
At USC, at Oregon, at Wazoo, I mean,
you got Michigan right
to
off
begin the
top.
The year, like it is, you're going to be punched right in the mouth to begin it, and one of those young and experienced quarterbacks going to be in the mix.
It almost becomes like a chicken or the egg thing with KJ Costello, though. Of why do you need to take KJ Costello? Because you took Jacob Eason and then lost Jacob Hayner. So this decision to take transfers could set you back potentially, rather than put you forward.
Okay, here's one more for you. Are you concerned?
Get ready.
With UW and their offense and their philosophy in terms of saying, what does it mean to be aggressive pro style?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is the difference between that and what Chris Peterson and Bush Hamden did? You know, in terms of their, to me, it looks like they're doubling down on this pro style attack when, you know, teams like LSU, they've gotten away from it and are going spread. How do you feel about their doubling down in this pro system?
I like that they can say, hey, here very definitively is what we are. Because for the last 2 years, I couldn't answer that question. Are you an RPO team? Are you a spread team? Are you an empty team? Are you a two-back team? Are you a two-tight-end team? Are you a pro-style team? Are you a spread team? Like, for the last 2 years, they were all of those things. And when you are a minor in all of those, you master in none of them.
Yep.
So I at least appreciate the fact going in, you're going to say, we are going to be masters in a two-tight-end, downhill, play-action kind of scheme. And you know what? LSU, good luck doing that against Alabama and Auburn and Florida in the SEC. Out west, with a lot of finesse out here, we can do it. We can do it against Oregon State and Washington State and Cal and Stanford and SC and UCLA and Arizona. Like, we can do it out there. In the SEC country, I think you're banging your head up against the wall against those front sevens. But out west, they're going to try to do, I think, a little bit of what they did at Boise State way back when.
Howdy, do me a favor. I want you to open up a text thread to all of us. Include Jake and Brock and then me, Curtis, and Kyle. And just say, you know what, you guys, just continue your conversations.
Just have at it.
Have at it, your quarterback conversations, and we'll just sit back quietly and watch it all unfold, all the craziness unfold. Brock, thank you for joining
us.
That was really
fun. Thanks for coming in, Brock.
Thanks, Brock. I really hope you didn't use my coat again as a towel still. That would be bad. Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory.
With Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
First down, Jake. 49ers cornerback Emmanuel Mosley is getting killed by the media and fans for allowing Tyreek Hill to be wide open on that 44-yarder. Why do you think it's unfair?
Well, I broke this down on 710sports.com. There's going to be a Chalk Talk that comes out, and I'm going to be explaining this very same thing, so you'll have a visual of this. But I thought this was more of a great job by Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy scheming up this play and setting this play up over the course of time, over the course of self-scout, and say, hey, when we go into this particular one formation, here's the one play that we consistently run in terms of our deep action drop back pass style of scheme. And so what you looked at the 49ers and defensively, what I have come to learn and what I got taught at Skyline High School from Steve Jervis and Matt Taylor was all zone turns into man at some point. At some point you have to take a man. And at 3rd and 15, Patrick Mahomes takes an insane drop 14 yards deep, which you should never do as a quarterback. Never teach that. But he did it to buy himself some time, because if he took a regular 7-step drop, he would have been sacked.
Yeah.
The dig route that happened in front of Mosley happened at 17 yards. At some point, you've got to get somebody, right? And there was underneath defenders there. I understand that. But at 17 yards, you see this happen on tape repeatedly over and over and over again. You're jumping that route and being aggressive, which they have been all year long. They sneak in Tyreek Hill, who runs a 4-2-40. Instead of running a deep cross like he always does, he sticks his foot in the ground and runs a corner. I guarantee you, the depth of that route, the timing of that route between the drop and the route itself, only Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill could get that done in that moment between his speed, his arm talent. That is one that you just tip of the cap and say, you know what, you got us there. And I think that the San Francisco 49ers, although they're getting smoked for it, Emmanuel Mosley's getting smoked for it, I more tip of the cap to Andy Reid, Eric Bieniemy, and crew for coming up from a well-designed play in a big moment.
Second down. Jake, why are the Seahawks interested in Greg Olsen, and how heavily should they pursue him?
It's very simple in my mind in terms of Greg Olsen and the Seahawks. I think it's a very natural connection from the standpoint of the Seahawks want a tight end that can be a factor in the run game and in the passing game. And I think Greg Olsen can check both of those boxes off and actually be still a very, at 35 years old, still be a dynamic receiving threat. And there's going to be critiques about this in terms of his health, his longevity, and I totally understand that. But the same thing can be said about Will Dissly that everybody is so excited about. He has yet to play even a half of season of football for the Seahawks in 2 years. I'm as big of a fan of Will Dissly as anybody, but there is some reality to this. And I think Greg Olsen coming in would be a great addition along with Will Dissly. Could allow the Seahawks to do a bunch of dynamic things in the run and the pass game. And once again, bring a legitimate receiving threat to that tight end position that you could count on.
Question number three. And by that, I mean third down.
Third down!
Third down! What's the plan at left tackle?
The planet left tackle?
Well, because here's the dealio.
You got
Dwayne
Brown.
We were talking about Greg Olsen. How seriously do you consider adding someone who's 35? Dwayne Brown, your best offensive lineman, one of the best left tackles in the league for the last several years. Is he also turning 35? He's getting close.
Yeah.
So what's their plan kind of after this year?
That's a great question. And Dwayne Brown dealing with injuries all year long and actually missed some time because of a knee injury that he needed to get cleaned up, was playing through a bicep injury. Dwayne Brown has essentially been playing through injuries since he's gotten here. That's why I call him a war daddy. He's a guy that you can count on, but the other side of it is, too, is that I'm going to have to get this down from what Brock said, but your body breaks down, the law of something.
Entropy?
Entropy, that's the word, entropy. And Dwayne Brown, to me, is a guy that I think you can count on for this year, but in terms of succession plan, there is none. They have no succession plan. There is not one guy that you can look on their roster and say, yeah, I feel confident about him playing left tackle. Jamarco Jones could have been that guy. But once you saw him play against the Arizona Cardinals, no thank you. I'm good. Chandler Jones wanted to go to Jamarco Jones' side, and he only played to his side and dominated. I think Jamarco Jones showed that he is much more of a guard in this league and can be a great guard instead of a tackle. And so with that being said, it's going to be interesting to see what they end up doing if George Fant ends up walking.
Fourth down.
Stacey lost her helmet, has to leave the game for one play. So the backup is in. Fourth down. NFL Network ranked the Seahawks number 7 in their postseason power rankings. Overrated, underrated, or properly rated?
I think it's close to properly rated because I think that it remains to be seen what their defense is going to look like. Maybe if they had Jadeveon Clowney under contract for another year, or if LJ Collier had more time as a rookie, they'd be a little higher because I think the questions that a national audience has are on that defense. So I think that's fair.
When you have Russell Wilson, I think that this is a fair spot to be in. But in terms of their roster, make no mistake, in this offseason, they have to make critical decisions for them to be at 7 and for them to potentially bump up even higher. So right now, 7, I think, is fairly respectable. And they can get themselves into the higher categories as they make critical decisions along their offense and defensive line, in my opinion.
The teams ahead of them, 6 were the Titans, 5 Packers, 4 Saints, 3 Ravens, 2 49ers, and number 1, the Super Bowl champion Chiefs.
I mean, they're all teams that had either better records or got further than them in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean,
totally understandable. And I would say that they have a better situation in terms of knowing exactly who they are. I think there's some transition in terms of the Seahawks, in terms of the personnel that they're going to go after, and also maybe philosophy and scheme. That transition, like I said, a lot is going to be determined in this offseason about what this Seahawks squad looks like in 2020.
We haven't much talked about Marco Gonzalez's new deal yet, but we're going to revisit that story as well as a few other of today's big stories in the halftime show. That's next.
It's time for the Halftime Show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The Halftime Show, it's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Last segment, Jake and I were visited by Brock Heward in studio. We were talking about the potential entropy of older players entering the league, whatever. 253 texts in to say, I think Brock meant the law of atrophy. Entropy is related to thermodynamics,
that
which I obviously knew.
A lot more sense. Maybe he was saying that because of atrophy, that your thermodynamics are off. So maybe
I don't
the law
think so.
Of
like
atrophy
what happens
affects
underneath
entropy.
A cast, like your leg, you got atrophied your leg. You lost all the muscle after you broke your leg. It was in a cast for 6.
Look, sure. Jake is a former quarterback. I'm a former English major. It's not our job to know what words mean. Okay? Look,
it's
we, have
Jake's
job. We have different
it's certainly not mine, but English major,
well,
you might have more accountability than me.
It is what it is.
Now I don't feel so bad.
Seahawks have a chance to capitalize on a 49ers Super Bowl hangover. Outside of the New England Patriots, who returned to the Super Bowl and won the Super Bowl, beating the Rams after falling to the Eagles in Super Bowl, 52? other teams have had a less than stellar record in the subsequent year, so there's a chance the Seahawks could capitalize on back-to-back years in which NFC division foes have gone to and lost the Super Bowl.
Right. Four out of the last five Super Bowl losers, four out of the last five have not been able to get back to the Super Bowl, and two of those missed the playoffs entirely, right? Missed the playoffs, some lost in the divisional round. So I look at the situation, and you should be optimistic about the Seahawks in terms of where they're at compared to the 49ers, compared to the Los Angeles Rams, in terms of having a franchise quarterback, having a GM and a head coach who's been able to get you there before, and also you are in a much healthier position with cap space and draft capital heading into 2020. That, to me, is a ton of reason to be optimistic about this group.
And I agree with you there in that it's just enough. There's something to be said for having a franchise quarterback that makes the difference and having been there before.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
I mean,
without question. The other thing that I think Brock Heward brought up in the 1 o'clock hour, we're saying all of this, but we're not dismissing the fact that it is going to be tough in the NFC West. It is going to be a battle every single week, and it is going to be a real challenge to be able to get through that division. But the Seahawks are in a prime position to recapture that division.
The Seahawks have some important offseason decisions to make. One of them could be an addition at tight end. Multiple reports coming out that Greg Olsen, now a free agent, will visit Seattle.
Now, we talked about prioritizing, right? Prioritizing where you want them to spend their money, Stacey. And you had said that you want them to prioritize spending on defense. When you hear something like this, doesn't mean that Greg Olsen's ultimately going to be signed, but that they have legitimate interest in tight end Greg Olsen. Is that screaming in your head, don't do it? Or are you curious about this move?
I'm curious, because I do think that they should make some kind of move, whether it's a free agent acquisition, a draft pick, an undrafted rookie free agent. I think they need to add some depth at tight end. It's a place where they had some unexpected injuries. The last two tight ends they ended up with, one was released and added to your practice squad to start the year. The other was signed during the regular season, Jacob Hollister and Luke Wilson. And I think that you like what you have with Will Disley. Pete Carroll and the Seahawks seems like really love him. But you've got some injury history to be concerned about. So I wouldn't mind seeing them add a piece there, and I also wouldn't be surprised by it.
It wouldn't surprise me in the least, and I think it is a very needed addition. I'm not saying Greg Olsen is the guy that you have to have, but I would not be mad at this signing whatsoever. And we talk about injury history with Will Disley. Like, he's got some injury history. The guy has not made it through a half a season yet in his first two seasons with the Seahawks. Very promising player when on the field, and I think he can be a great one someday if he can stay healthy, and he has yet shown that you can do that. And you have been put in a bad spot at the tight end position in particular because of that, because of Ed Dixon. You need stability there, and I think bringing in a guy like Olsen could potentially provide that.
I also very much endorse whenever an 80s baby is added to the roster.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
But you know?
Jake says, is there a voice screaming, don't do it? No. But there's a voice maybe whispering, like,
you've made this mistake before.
Hey, it's me, your conscience.
Hey, Ziggy Ansah, Eddie Lacy, Luke Jokel, stop getting 35-year-old scrap heap free agents.
Okay. You know what? People in their 30s are still really young.
I mean, we talked last
let
week.
Let me defend Greg Olsen here, Kyle.
Please.
Okay? Ziggy Ansah, as Brock and I horrifically were chest bumped after his signing because we were so
never
fired up
it.
About
it.
Humbling in hindsight.
It is humbling, and it has also scarred me to make sure that I'm very cautious about these decisions, right? Ziggy Ansah was coming off of a major injury with his shoulder, and to the point where you were unsure of whether he was able to start the season off. Luke Jokel is coming off an ACL tear. Greg Olsen's coming off of a performance where he played in 14 games. He had over 600 yards receiving while playing for a Kyle Allen at quarterback. And I think that this guy still has juice left in him in terms of being a very productive receiving threat in the NFL.
18 games the last 3 years.
I hear you. It is one that you deal with caution.
All I'm saying is, like Russell said at the Pro Bowl, we can add in free agency, but what do you say? We can add stars.
Yes.
Greg Olsen was a star like 5 years ago.
Yeah, you're right about that. You're absolutely right about that. So at the right price, Does that raise my level of excitement? Sure, at the right price. But it is one that I think you're exploring, you're interested in, because he does have that superstar level of ability.
Marco Gonzalez agreed to a four-year, $30 million contract extension. We talked to Shannon Dreher the other day about this, but now we have some new sound. Jerry DePoto and Marco himself were at press conferences earlier today. Should we roll with DePoto first, see what he had to say?
What Marco has been, really since the day he got here, back in 2017, is truly one of the most consistent pitchers in the American League. Over these last two seasons, 18-19, has ranked in the top 10 in the league in innings pitched and wins, and, you know, very quietly in WAR, wins above replacement for starting pitcher, which is not to be taken lightly. We found him to be a foundational piece in what we were trying to build. And he does it with a competitiveness that I think drives the team around him, that is perhaps among the 25 guys, we will soon be 26 in our clubhouse, the thing that stands out most about Marco.
And we've got Marco Gonzalez in this next clip right here.
To the Mariners and the city of Seattle, I think we found our home. We truly believe that the reason that I'm so competitive and passionate here is because this is our home city. This is the place that we're going to defend and, make it our home stadium. So when teams come in here, you can understand why I'm a little fiery and a little feisty sometimes, and I'm sorry about that. But I'm sorry for not being sorry.
I'm sorry for not being sorry. Look, Marco Gonzalez to me is a guy that, when you look at it from all of the intangibles, he provides a lot for this organization, and they feel really good about his leadership. They feel really good about the guy that he will be in the clubhouse. And ultimately, as Jerry DePoto explained, I think that this is a very good middle rotation starting pitcher. This is not a guy you're signing to expecting that he's going to be a one or two for you. He's going to be a great three for you, hopefully. And I think that this is a guy that if you feel, and this is how I think of this, if you're starting to sign guys like Evan White and you're starting to sign guys like Marco Gonzalez, who are, these are low-risk types of signings, you still are building towards something. You think that this turnaround is actually going to happen within the next year or two. That's the way I see this thing. And so if you're making that, it's positive. It may be positive. It may be nerve-wracking to fans. Are they trying to make something happen too soon? Or are you excited that they feel like these young prospects are coming at a very, very good rate?
Well, and the way that Shannon was talking about it too is it's just kind of a, like you said, like a safe bet. You're hoping that, yeah, the ceiling could be high, but we also aren't putting all our eggs in one basket. We aren't paying, you know, either White or Gonzalez like a top tier player, but we want to keep them around. We value what they bring to the organization. We think they deserve to be paid now. So be interesting to see certainly this year, and obviously where that kind of build goes next year. Coming up next, we've got some funny sound from a San Francisco sports radio station. That's next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
Tough day for San Francisco Sports Talk Radio after the Super Bowl. Hey, man, we get it. Been there. But here on 95.7 The Game was the host in the open of the show.
Don Nelson used to always make a distinction between getting beat and losing. And when he thought the other team did enough to win, he'd say, we got beat. But when he thought his team didn't play well, he'd say, we lost. The 49ers lose or get beat yesterday?
They lost. I know you don't like the word, and I'm going to use it. They choked. 10-point lead, six minutes left in the fourth quarter, a game where you kept Mahomes in check. I expect you to win that damn game, and it's tragic that they didn't. We'll get into it. And Bonte Hill, I'm your big brother. You got two of them here. I'm honestly hugging you, you and Shasky, because that had to hurt. But there is no reason the Niners lost that game yesterday besides negligence on their part, starting with the coaching staff.
Negligence. Dang.
Some strong
words. But
honestly,
I understand that. I think San Francisco's a great team, obviously. I understand the frustration of not only the hosts out there, but the fans, and we'll have that sound coming up. But it was one of those games where through three quarters, you thought, oh my gosh, this is way less competitive than I thought it would be. Granted, Kansas City with Patrick Mahomes, nothing is impossible. There are different quarterbacks that they would have played where I would have thought in the third quarter, this game's over. There was always that possibility of a comeback with Mahomes, especially with the way that Kansas City had been playing through the playoffs, where both games previous to that, the divisional round and championship game, they came from behind.
Yeah.
One was the most improbable comeback in playoff history. The other being in the Super Bowl in the fourth quarter, 21 points scored, the most ever in a fourth quarter for a Super Bowl. So, yeah, you kind of did.
I'm kind of proud of them saying that the 49ers cost themselves.
Yeah.
It wasn't egregious, but there was enough, like, close calls and plays that they could have come in and been like, well, if they throw that offensive PI on Kittle, it's a different game.
Or correct.
There wasn't, yeah. Exactly. It wasn't like the Saints-Rams where I think people looked at that and said, well, that could have been a different outcome. That could have been a different team in the Super Bowl. It wasn't just one call.
There was enough questionable mismanagement in terms of the clock at the end of the first half, and I think at the end of the game as well, that really put things into perspective. And also, with Jimmy Garoppolo and his play in the fourth quarter, you had to get the way the game was going. Your defense was playing extremely well against Patrick Mahomes and that offense, and your quarterback and Jimmy Garoppolo could not convert and sustain drives for you. And if he converts and sustains drives, we're talking about the 49ers winning the Super Bowl here. I think that's a huge difference in this game.
And it's not only that. We're going to have Bill Barnwell of ESPN coming up at 2 o'clock to talk about his recap, his Super Bowl takeaways. And we're going to ask him a bit about Russell Wilson and that kind of conversation about franchise quarterbacks, where the Seahawks could be going. But one thing he said is, outside of just Mahomes and Garoppolo having different performances in the biggest moment of the game, those fourth quarter drives, he also says Andy Reid just out-coached Kyle Shanahan, and that the biggest kind of battle in the game might have been between those two coaches, not the two quarterbacks.
And that is interesting as we, you know, get a chance to talk with Barnwell and looking forward to it, because his article was awesome. Really broke it down really nice in terms of the differences between those two guys. So looking forward to get his thoughts. But you have some other funny sound for us from, I thought that was pretty level-headed.
Their callers are so sad.
Okay, go for it.
Oh, really?
Oh, man, this is devastating, guys.
Man, that was terrible, man. I mean, Latrell's free will, man. Bunch of choke artists, man.
Towards the end of the game, that defensive pass interference in the end zone, that's a punk call.
This is driving me nuts, man. I mean, we're the San Francisco 49ers, and I feel sorry for Joe Staley, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, can you imagine him two times in the Super Bowl that took him about three coaches to get back there? He was 0-2 in a... Dude, we're not the Cincinnati Bengals, man. We're the 49ers.
Can somebody tell me why did the genius Kyle Shanahan had decided to throw on second and down? The Niners were averaging 6 yards, and they only ran the ball 22 times last night. Deb, I wish Mike Shanahan was coaching and not Kyle. In the words of John Calipari, a successful person never loses. He either wins or learns. I guess Andy Reid learned, and I guess Kyle Habit.
The Niners are going to have a real long offseason. I don't know what the Richard Sherman going to be thinking about this offseason, because Darrell Revis with his mojo, hey. I believe
we'll get one in the next 5 years, I'd say. But within 5 years, we'll have a Super Bowl. Promise you that one.
That music, first of all, the music makes me feel like this is about to be a commercial telling me to adopt a dog with one eye.
It's so
like, it just
good.
Sounds
the ASPCA is doing
like
tremendous
you
work.
To donate. Welcome. It's really sad. Also,
I love it.
It most people sounded sad, but that one guy chimes in. I wish it was Mike Shanahan coaching.
Get this bum out of here.
Yes, Kyle Shanahan. Whoa.
Dude, we're not the Cincinnati Bengals, man. We're the 49ers.
Oh, no. Poor Cincinnati.
Leave Cincinnati out of this. What did they ever do to you, huh?
What did they do?
Oh, man, I love it. I love it so much. You know, if you can't be in there in the Super Bowl, as a Seahawk fan, then you can revel in a little bit of the pain that the 49ers are going through right now, especially knowing that, you know, it they were probably reveling in ours back in 2014 when we lost our Super Bowl. So those are some great cut-ups and a great montage there that we were able to listen to.
One very last point here on the timeline. Jake, I want to get your perspective here before we throw it a break and talk to Bill Barnwell. I want to know what you think of KJ Costello heading to Mississippi State.
Well, it's interesting because, look, KJ Costello to me is not this guy that's like it's a make or break in terms of, oh, man, if he's coming into your program, you guys are going to win the Pac-12 or you're going to all of a sudden Mississippi State is now going to be the favorites to win the SEC. But I think it comes down to this fundamental thought process of KJ Costello looking at UW and their situation and it being a really good one for him to ultimately win the job and be the starter because of his experience. And honestly, he played in the similar system at Stanford. He played in a pro-style, heavy-run offense at Stanford, and that's what UW is trying to do in Montlake. But instead, he went to Mississippi State, and I think it really is telling from a standpoint from a quarterback that, look, Mike Leach and spread systems, you don't need to have back – even 10 years ago when I was coming out, it was you need to be in a pro-style system to give yourself the best chance to play in the NFL, to give yourself a comp for scouts to put you in the NFL. That's not the case anymore. You can go play in the air raid and still get into the NFL. You can play in a heavy spread system, put up numbers, and put up film and throws and be attractive to scouts. So KJ Costello looks at the UW offense and says, this situation is not going to help me get to where I need to be. And I think that is very telling, and it concerns me a little bit.
How did the Chiefs build their fourth quarter comeback to win the Super Bowl, and what can the Seahawks do to get back there? We're going to talk to Bill Barnwell next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.